is that I was once a person who never believed that this could be my life. And I'm not even gonna say through stubbornness that I ended up doing it, because I still did it in fear. You know, I remember it so well, and I was frightened out of my life. And I just remember sitting there thinking, oh my God, you know, they've got degrees and they've got this and they've got that. And there was a little bit of like, I can't do this. I can't pay out all this money and all this time and not be a counsellor. It just can't happen.
Welcome to Good Enough Counsellors, the podcast for growing a private practice without the pressure to be perfect. I'm Josephine Hughes, counsellor and creator of Therapy Growth Group, helping you get the clients you want and create the practice of your dreams. Today I'm joined by Gemma Anderson, a counsellor based here in Essex, who has been working in private practice for nearly 10 years now. Gemma's story is such an encouraging one for anyone building a practice, because she's found a way of working that really suits her without overcomplicating things. In our conversation, I'm hoping that we'll talk about what first drew her into counselling, how her practice has developed, and the choices she's made along the way to keep things sustainable. And I've invited her on the show because I think you'll find her approach really practical and helpful. So let's get started. Welcome, Gemma.
Hello, good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant to see you. So we're just going to get started, Gemma. I'm going to see if we can draw you in gently and help you relax a bit by maybe telling us what first drew you into counselling. How did you get involved in counselling?
Well, to give you a little bit of a background beforehand, because I think that will help to understand what drew me to it in the first place. Although I will say the actual drawing me into it initially was not as fun to talk about, because it was a friend, but I'll get to that a bit in a minute. So I was a really young mum, had my children at a really young age, which is neither here nor there really, in regards to the fact that it meant that I didn't start off in life maybe the most traditional way from leaving school. And as a result of that, and being a parent and just needing to provide, I just worked so many different jobs, from bakery jobs to loan agent jobs. I worked all sorts of different jobs. Don't get me wrong, I didn't feel at the time that that wasn't fulfilling me, because I just think I felt some level of independence, just earning my own money for many years, really. For many, many years, actually, because I became a mum at 16 and I didn't actually get into the counselling until I was 29. So I spent many, many years going through different jobs. And I think part of the reason why I never felt that there was any sort of career ahead of me was because I definitely didn't think, out of me and my sibling, that I was the one that was clever.
Yeah.
So my sister was always very academic, and I was sort of always labelled as the happy-go-lucky creative one, you know, which, don't get me wrong, you know, that's true. But it kind of didn't really guide me in any other way, really. So I think I just sort of went along life feeling like, oh, this is okay, this is what I do. And as I say, having that kind of idea that I wasn't clever, I kind of never looked into anything that could have effectively been something long term.
Yeah, because you were sort of like almost living up to that expectation that this is who you are.
Yes.
You're not the clever one, so you wouldn't do more than this. Yeah.
Yes, I definitely spent. But as I say, I didn't seem unhappy doing that. I just didn't realise there was anything else out there for me. And then it wasn't until, as I say, I might have even been 28, maybe 29 at the time, that I actually had an old school friend who actually ended up marrying my partner's brother. So, yeah. And she had just started the counselling skills at the time. And because we were sort of almost family, when we went down there at weekends, she would sort of say to me, oh, I've started this counselling thing. I was like, oh, okay. So we would chat, and, you know, it was only the skills at the time, but it absolutely intrigued me.
Yeah.
And I thought, do you know what? I think this is something I want to do, which then from that, I will honestly say that I deliberated for quite a little while. And I even remember getting, because I paid for myself to get through the training, and you could pay monthly. Thank God for that, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do it, if I'm honest with you. And it got to a point where she she said to me to do it. I managed to get the money together, which was a deposit. And I remember it being in a bag at the bottom of my stairs, hanging over the banister. And I knew the money was there. And it took me quite some time to actually get the bravery to sign up, because I still had this message playing that wasn't going to be, you know, be successful. I was never going to do anything other than what I was doing.
Yeah.
I will say what allowed it at the time, though. So although I had all those jobs, I eventually settled in as a domestic cleaner. And because of the domestic cleaning and the flexibility around the cleaning, that's what allowed me to get
to have the time to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What helped you get over that, oh, it's not for me? In the end, what helped you to take that plunge?
Oh, I was so scared. I remember my very first session, I was so scared. Oh, do you know what? I don't know. I think I just went with the fear and did it anyway. And I know that's not always the best helpful advice, but I just was, you know, I feel like nerve just even thinking about it now. I remember how scared I was, because I just thought, can I actually do this, you know? So I think in the end, it was just that I had the money and I felt like I just didn't have any more excuses. Not do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I never thought that was ever going to come to me. Like, if you'd have asked me when I was cleaning a year before that, if you thought that next year I would be on a course doing something that could potentially, you know, give me a career and earn me good money, I would have never have believed you.
Yeah, amazing. So when you were doing the cleaning, were you working for yourself or were you working for someone else?
I originally was working for someone else, and then I started to realise that I can earn better money by doing it on my own.
Yeah.
Because you pay a fee to the person that's getting you the work. So in the end, I remember actually, I actually got leaflets done, and I'm taking them around to my local area, and also just putting it out on to friends and family and things like that. So I ended up with a nice amount, but I've always quite liked the really, I do not like to be tied down to a 9-to-5. I have really thought about myself, because even all the jobs that I had when the kids were younger, I always tried to work around school time. Any job I took, I try to make that work. And I think as I'm older, I've realised, because one of the things my sister said to me, which is really funny, she said, "Gemma, you do know one day you're going to have to get a proper job." And what she meant by that is a 9-to-5. I know that she meant that, because that's all my sister ever did.
Yeah.
She's like, "One day you're going to have to get a proper job." And I was like, "Well, I'm still not there, and I'm now 44.
I'm doing fine as I am." Do you think that your sort of life experience has being the young mum and, you know, doing all that stuff, having, because I mean, it's sort of like, from what you've said, you had to be really independent from quite a young age. And yet there's also, I should think, although in some ways you said, "Oh, I didn't really think I was, you know, made for other jobs," but still you really sustained yourself, didn't you? You know, you went out, you were going out to work, you were earning money, you were sort of helping your family along. So do you think that sort of shaped the therapist that you are today?
Oh, 100%, yeah. 100%. I do think that, you know, what you've got to remember is some of the jobs that I did, it's really interesting how you can take some skills from your previous jobs and into your jobs in the future. Because if I just pick out a couple, one of them was I worked at a bakery, and it was in an area where a lot of school kids would come in at lunchtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I absolutely loved that job, where I would talk to all the kids, how they're getting on at school. You know, I think I almost became like this auntie.
Yeah, you're already using those counselling skills.
Yeah, and I absolutely loved those times. And even if anyone came in, I'm always intrigued about people's lives and, you know, what makes them tick, and how, I don't know, I'm just really interested in people. And sometimes I can come across as nosy. This was before counselling, but I would ask a lot of questions, but I'm just so, honestly, I just like people. And so I want to know, like, different people's lives. But also, so that was one, and I really enjoyed that. But then also I had another job where I worked as a loan agent, which was basically for a company that would knock at houses, and it would be like house loans to homes. Don't get me wrong, I feel like it was, looking back now, it probably quite a dodgy job, because you'd be carrying money around with you. But What I will say is that I come across a lot of people that struggled financially.
Yeah.
Or had struggles, because not being funny, a lot of, well, the loans were aimed at people that couldn't go to the bank and get a loan. So I was going into a lot of low budget housing, meeting so many different people. And there was a lot of time, I remember I'd walk around my local Asda's at the time, and out of the corner of my eye, I'd see someone ducking and diving, trying to hide from me because they hadn't paid me that week.
Yeah.
Now, what I found was a way of dealing with that was I just said to them, look, I get it. Like, just tell me how much you can afford, but don't tell me how much you think I want to hear. Tell me what you can actually do.
Yeah.
So I feel like I am, one of the things that I really, really pride myself on being as a counsellor is relatable. I want to be down to earth. I want to be like every other person.
Yeah.
I don't want to be anything special. I don't, you know, I grew up in a council estate. My mum was a single mum. My dad was around, but my mum was a single mum, brought up me and my sister. You know, I've been around people who maybe are struggling in life, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's always just been quite natural to me just to want to know about people's lives, help people where I can, you know. So, yeah, definitely, I think it shapes me.
Just take people as they are. Because there's one of the things that I think really stood out to me, you know, when I was sort of like doing the research behind, I went and read your counselling directory and your Psychology Today. And one of the things I think you really make clear is you say, I'm not above you.
Yeah.
And I think that really comes across. And what you're saying is just that, getting alongside people, isn't it? You don't want people to think that you're sort of, you know, on a pedestal or anything like that.
Yeah.
And what you're saying about that work, you know, going around and asking people for their loans, just, you know, it's meeting people where they're at, isn't it? Really sort of valuable skills that just part of who you are, I think. And do you think, part of the reason why I asked you about, you know, your cleaning business was, you know, do you think that helped you when you came to setting up in private practice, you know, having had those different experiences and, you know, almost sort of doing things like making sure that you got customers for your cleaning business? Do you think that gave you maybe a certain level of confidence in your private practice?
Do you know what? I don't think it did. I don't think that bit transferred over really, because I don't know, maybe again through confidence in something new that maybe you can feel that same level of, oh, I kind of know what to do here. Because I can hear what you're saying. It's almost like, well, that was a business going into another business.
Yeah.
But I did feel like counselling did feel scarier than the getting clients for cleaning. I knew I was good at the cleaning, but I suppose when you're training and you've not actually got out there and done it, you don't know if you're going to be good at the counselling. So I don't know if that necessarily, I don't think, the only thing I'd say that helped me was purely because there wasn't any real, I didn't have to work 9 to 5 in the cleaning. I mean, cleaning is knackering, I'm not going to lie. You know, it's hard work. But, you know, in the end, I think that just helped me to pay for it and to find time to do any of the work that needed to be done.
As far as gave you that sort of springboard, really.
Yeah.
So tell us about how you got into private practice. Did you start sort of straight after you'd finished your diploma, or did you do something else in between? What sort of happened, and how did you find that courage to set up in private practice, as a lot of people struggle with setting up?
So for me, I was very much aware of the fact that when I was doing that course, this wasn't a course to eventually just go back to my everyday job.
Yeah.
To me, it had to become a thing.
Yeah.
It was almost like, I cannot spend all this money and all of this time and not get something out of it. I just was refusing that idea. It had to be. Whereas I did meet a lot of people on my course at the time that had full-time jobs that really, really struggled to find the time to actually get themselves out into private practice.
Yeah, so, that's interesting.
So for me, I originally did my, I got a lot of my confidence because my original placement was at Mind in Basildon, and I got a really good variety of clients there, and I actually ended up staying on there for about 7 years.
Wow, yeah.
Because I enjoyed it so much, and that was kind of my bit back to the community, I suppose, because I did it voluntary on a Saturday at the time. And then so from that I gained a lot of confidence, and as I say, there was also this mindset of, I can't not have it work like that. But I think I'm trying to remember in order, but I had a supervisor at the time, and he was really helpful to me. And actually, I chose this supervisor for a particular reason, because he scared the life out of me. But more because I put him on a pedestal of a successful man, and where I still was dealing with that part of myself that wasn't 100% sure that I can do this, he really did help me. And he kind of, I'd say my supervisor did help me by giving me ways of how do I, the things that I need in place, basically.
Yeah.
And I actually had another counsellor at the time that I haven't seen for quite some time, but another counsellor that was actually already doing the job. And yeah, one thing I've realised, as much as I sometimes don't feel like I'm necessarily clever enough or, you know, successful enough, I don't mind asking people for help. I've always been like that. And I think I probably wouldn't have got where I am now if it hadn't been for the fact that I actually will say to people, you know, help.
So I just want to pause us there, because obviously Gemma and I know each other outside of this situation. And I find asking for help really difficult, don't I? And you and I had a conversation about this. I remember
we were both a little bit
drunk at the time, it has to be said. But it was quite fun. Can you say what, I don't know if you can remember what you told me, but what do you think people's attitudes are if someone comes to them and says, can you help me? Because you don't mind asking for help, do you? And what do you think people's response are when you ask for help?
I can't remember what I said that particular evening, but I will say that generally I think that there is one theory that I do have, is if other people have got stuff going on in their own life, sometimes giving themselves a break from that and actually helping someone else and feeling useful in that way is beneficial. And I remember a girl I know who does spiritual coaching, actually, I think.
Yeah.
But she put something on her page once that I saw, and it said something about no one gets anywhere without help.
Yeah.
And that really struck a chord, even though I kind of believed it anyway, it kind of emphasised the fact that actually, do you know what, that is true, and a lot of people will withhold from asking for help because they somehow feel like maybe they haven't made it on their own and it feels like they've had too much help from other people. But the idea that no one ever gets anywhere without some help from someone, I think I believe.
Yeah.
And I've never been afraid of, it's really strange because it kind of goes against what I've said before around sometimes not feeling as clever. But I will very much happily say to someone, what does that word mean? Because I would rather be the person that ends up knowing what that means, you know, from asking that question, rather than maybe most people sitting around me is probably thinking the same thing, but not saying
it. Yeah. And I guess part of it as well is if you don't have this sort of almost like you don't need to prove that you're clever in a way, because it's almost like, you know, it's okay for me to ask because I don't know if I'm putting this into your words, into your mouth, but you know, I don't have to be clever, so I can ask, you know, because I'm not the clever one, maybe. Whereas maybe somebody who's trying to maintain that sort of, yes, I know everything.
I don't mind, you know. Do you know what, actually, I'll say one thing. In life, not in the counselling, but in any other aspect of my life, I am confident.
Yeah.
When it comes to the counselling, that was taking me out of that comfort. And so the only time I feel a little bit tetchy these days is actually around other counsellors, because as much as we're, you know, in a role that is accepting, and, you know, you can also sometimes feel quite judged because they might feel like they can't talk to you like as if they're coming from a higher place. And you know, I've had my, not in a bad way, but over the years, you know, I've always been said, you know, like, when are you going to get a real job? Or I've had comments said to me around, you know, you live in a bit of a daydream world, which I did. I know why that is now, because I used to be, oh, I'm going to be a police officer. Oh, I'm going to be a Cisco networker because my sister's husband was doing it. Oh, I'm going to be this. Oh, I'm going to be that. And I never did any of it because I don't think I believed that I could get there. So it was kind of like, I just won't put myself to anything because then I can't bow.
And I think the thing is sort of like, you know, it's knowing that you can do it, and it's seeing people like yourself doing it as well sometimes. And it might be that you sort of think, oh, you know, because I had my baby's young and I, you know, I worked in a bakery or whatever, that isn't for the likes of me. And it's sort of like, it's not having the role models there, I think often can be part of it as well, or even just that expectation. Well, your sister's the one who's going to do that sort of stuff, but you're not, because you're not the same, you know.
It's strange in a way, though, because I'd say that my mum didn't have really much of an expectation of me because of the fact that my sister was the clever one.
Yeah.
So I don't know if in some ways, though, that meant a still a lack of guidance, because being happy-go-lucky, caring, and the things, I actually, with a friend once, said to them, if you rang up your mum, dad, you know, what if you asked them to describe you in three words, what would those be? And they'd sit there and they'd go, oh, I don't know, like some people don't have that sense of how people see them.
Yeah.
I could literally tell you exactly how my mum would describe me.
Yeah.
And I actually done it as a little experiment while they were there. And I said, I rang up my mum and she wasn't really happy with me, I'll be honest. I said to her, Mum, in three words, describe me. And she was like, oh, you've put me on the spot now. But she came out with the three words that I expected her to say, which is happy-go-lucky, caring. I did get called sort of, I am quite well known. When that song came out, Lost Your Keys, Lost Your Phone, that was kind of dedicated to me, because I spent a lot of my life losing things.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, I did have, but she didn't really say to me, oh, I need to have this or I need to have that, because we had grown up in a council estate. No one owned the home. I think it was more of, I didn't have any, and my mum had school. So there was no real, I think it was just my sister came through and everyone recognised that she had some level of extra intelligence. And so they pushed her more in that. But for me, I was kind of left to my own devices, really.
Yeah. And just for the listeners as well, the place where Gemma and I live has still got grammar schools. And so it's a real sort of two-tier education system. So if you get into grammar school, that is one way that, you know, you're pushed and your career develops. And for everybody else, they're often not pushed any further.
No, I think you're 100% right about that, because I will say that when I finished junior school and I was at a very, you know, traditional junior school, I was told, don't bother putting Gemma in for it.
Yeah, for the 11 plus.
No, don't put me in for it. But interestingly, when I talked to friends that I went to school with, they said to me, Gemma, like the first couple of years of school, you were classed as the boffin. You know, so I didn't leave with the best GCSEs, but I don't think it was through intelligence. And when I actually ask people now, I wonder if how I thought people viewed me was very different to how it actually was, because when I listened to them now, they said, Gemma, we thought you was clever at school, but you just messed around a bit, because maybe I just didn't.
We didn't believe it. No. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, how with these messages and circumstances, you know, so you go to a particular school and there's just not the same pushiness that there is for someone who goes to the grammar school. And I failed my 11 plus, so there we go. It's November, which means bonfire night, darker evenings and, of course, Black Friday discounts. And I've got one running all month for Therapy Growth Group, my membership that helps counsellors and therapists grow their private practice with confidence. The full annual membership is normally £720, but here is where my slightly dodgy maths comes in. Because last year I offered a much bigger discount than I intended to, but it was so popular that I've decided to keep it open, but just for the first five people who take it up. That means that you can get a full year's membership for £420. That's 40% off the regular price. After those first five spots are taken, I'm still going to offer a discount, which will be 25% off, or £540 for the year. So the offer's open until the end of November. That's the 30th, so don't leave it too late. If you'd like weekly coaching, community support, and a step-by-step way to grow your private practice, join now at josephinehughes.com and do it quickly before those first five spaces go. So just sort of moving on to the private practice, so you had some help sort of getting it set up. Were you really nervous about it, about getting set up in private practice? Was it scary?
I think where I'd been, because not only did I do my placement in Mind, I also had a placement in an adult counselling service in Benfleet at the time. So I was kind of doing two at the time. And I think from my supervisor that I was talking about before, he already had a set of rooms that he was renting out for private counselling. And so through knowing there was availability for renting a room, as well as the help that I was getting from other counsellors around how to get your data, like how to register with ICO, how to, you know, who to go with for insurance, you know. I do a hell of a lot. I'm very well known a little bit as a maybe you can call it this now because maybe it's a different thing, but like a Google queen, you know. I will know all my information. If there's anything I know, if there's something I'm interested in, I mark my words, I'll know how to do it, you know. But I will say, I definitely remember that ICO thing, the data registration thing, being difficult because you had to do an initial statement. I can't remember what it was now, but I asked for help for that. And at the time, someone was very happy to show me theirs, and, you know, and sometimes that's all I need, really. It's just, I need to be shown something, and you kind of look at it and you go, oh, you know, that's fine, I can do that, you know.
Yeah, it's simpler than you imagine,
And then that's how I got into it. As far as clients are concerned, the first thing I did, it's funny because I actually also watch what other people do. So people who are ahead of me, I kind of asked them, you know, what they did when they first set up, and in a way that I kind of work out secondary whether or not it works for them. So I do that a lot, actually, because I go, well, what, like, should I have a website? And I never bothered entering into that. And I remember one of the first things I did, and I was so excited about it, was I got some cards made.
Yeah, business cards,
And I honestly, to this day, I promise you, I never gave a single one out. Never.
It was a waste. Didn't need them.
I felt like it was a waste of my money in the end. Although it was quite nice having this
little card
that kind of like said, you know, I'm a counsellor, you know. But I think that so having rooms available, and then what I did was I signed up to Counselling Directory, because Psychology Today, I don't think, was around when I...
No, it wasn't around a number of years ago, was it?
I went to Counselling Directory, and that would have been where I got my first clients from. And slowly but surely, that built up.
Did you start getting clients straight away? Because I know sometimes people... You know, it can take a while, or did you?
I look at your, you know, your Facebook thing, other people's, and I see that question come up a lot. And I feel like it's really hard to gauge, because you see some people that are saying, oh, I'm completely and utterly full, and others saying, oh, I'm really struggling at the moment. And it seems like there's no real...
explanation.
explanation of why people get more and why people don't. I mean, when I say that, though, there are certain theories that I have.
Go on, tell us what they are.
Well, I a lot of the time that I see people who are struggling, and people have got more often than not ask people for their opinion on their, their profiles, which, you know, I think is a good idea, but then everyone's got their own opinion, haven't they?
So you get 100 different opinions,
I think it can confuse people even more, and they end up changing it and then completely forgetting that they're writing about themselves, you know, because they're trying to fit everything for everyone else. But I do feel like a good picture.
I agree with you.
I've always thought this, and I look sometimes at people's photos that are not doing well, and I kind of look at it and think, you know, I can kind of see why you might not be getting the clients. So although my photo isn't a professional photo, going back to what we spoke about before in regard to looking, now don't get me wrong, I can't tell you what a photo looks like that's meant to be an approachable photo as such. But for myself, that's what I was aiming for. I didn't want people to see me as like a teacher, like formal. I just wanted to be seen as less formal. And that's always what I've been wanting to be seen as, you know. And also for me, it's like I can't shout it enough. And obviously, if you have read my profile, I just want people to think that I am just, I think I might have put somewhere there. I don't want to be seen as the polished professional. I want to be seen as just someone who is, again, just like everyone else. And I'm not going to be, you know, I don't know. It would be my worst nightmare to go to a counsellor like that. I suppose that's where I come from. I think it has shaped me, because to some degree, it's definitely based off the fact that I would feel very uncomfortable being in a room with someone that I couldn't
relate to,
and then feeling judged.
So I think there's one phrase where you say, you know, I try to get alongside you, and I thought that was a nice phrase as well, because it does come across that you just are like everyone else, really, and you're not this sort of. It's that sense of being judged, I think, isn't it? That, you know...
just wanting to be, like you say, alongside everyone, wanting to be the same as everyone else. I mean, I had a client once, which I thought was hilarious, say to me, oh, I chose you because I thought your photo looked bants. Now, for the people at home that might not know what that actually means, right, it was just short for banter, but I don't know if that's the vibe I was going for. But at the same time, he was like, oh, I just thought you looked like you could have a laugh and not take life too seriously. Yeah. And I suppose that kind of does fit into it. You know, I don't get me wrong, I don't want people thinking that it's all just going to be fun and games. But don't get me wrong, my clients definitely feel happy to swear in my sessions, definitely feel happy just to be themselves, you know, where they sit with their legs up on the couch. I just want them just to be themselves. Yeah. And I think that the vibe that I get, you know, and how people respond, and, you know, it's nice. I can tell that they're feeling comfortable. Mm-hmm. I might add, actually, because there was something I forgot, which is actually quite important at first, is I offered my first session free. I did that for years. I only changed it just recently, which still upsets me that I even had to change it, but I made it half price. Now, again, I learned that from my supervisor. He said he'd always done it himself, and it kind of, on a business level as well, because I had so much confidence in myself in the room that I thought to myself, you know, again, when I said she was so much confident in the room with the client, I am really confident in that area. Mm. It's only around other counsellors that I seem to get a little bit touchy about.
Yeah.
But I will say that because I've got so much confidence in myself with the clients, I knew that client was going to come back.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds really a bit, you know, too confident, maybe cocky, but I believed in myself. And when I know that how I can help people feel in that first session.
Yeah.
So for me, it was well worth giving the session away, well worth it. Mm. And also as well, if we go on the other side of it, I mean, you might look at that on more of a business level, but for me, I don't know a lot about business anyway, but for me, I will say that I want people to not feel put on the spot.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I like that as well. So again, it goes based on what I don't like. And I think that when I used to say to my clients, I used to always prep them before the session and say, right, as you know, the first session is free. If you do decide you want to come back, I'm not going to actually ask you at the end of the session. I'm just going to say, thank you very much for coming. But if you want to return, it took me a while to tweak this, but if you want to return, to let me know within 48 hours.
Yeah.
I sometimes didn't give a time frame, which I definitely learned over a period of time to change that, because I'd have clients messaging me 2 weeks later saying, oh, yeah, I want to come back, by the way. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, God, now I can't fit you in, or that slot's gone, or whatnot. So for me, handing that first session free and even doing it half price now, I've had such a good response on that. And I know a lot of people say, oh, know your worth. But I just feel so confident in that first session that they're going to return.
Yeah.
It's so way worth it.
Yeah, because it sort of in the long term, it pays off. So tell me about this change, because I was quite surprised, actually, because you've only just changed, haven't you, to the half price first session.
That's only because literally I have to pay for my room, and I just thought I can't just not have my... I mean, that's really more of it. And I've had the prices of rooms have gone up.
Yeah. So it's just covered, you know, the room cost.
So for me, I just thought, do you know what? It was definitely not about seeing my worth or anything like that. It was purely out of a financial reason that I had to do that in the end, because I just thought if you've kind of got a lack of clients for a little while and then loads join all at the same time, that could be quite a few sessions that you're doing for free. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong as well, like, you might ask this question already or it might be coming up, but, you know, don't get me wrong, there are times where my client intake goes down.
Yeah.
Where people come to an end, and, you know, a natural end, which is good, because we also want that for them.
Yeah, that's right.
But also, it took me a long time to embrace the quiet periods, because naturally, money can be a worry. And actually, this is where it leads me on to sort of the next thing, actually, is I do actually have another job.
Yeah, tell us about what you do.
So I actually took this job on as I qualified. I'm pretty certain that's how it works. I was doing the cleaning. I thought cleaning was hard work. I did carry a few over with me for a little while. So at one point, I think I had three jobs. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up slowly but surely getting rid of the cleaning. And then I took on a job as a merchandiser, yeah, which is working at my local Asda, just doing the makeup, mm-hmm, where I just sort of do counts and putting out the stock, because, you know, most supermarkets use outside merchandisers to come in and do some of the work that you might think Asda's workers do, but it's actually merchandisers that come in and do that work. Mm. So that's sort of, it's contracted for, well, when I say contracted, it's round about 18 hours a week. Mm-hmm.
It's quite, yeah, reasonable, yeah, amount of time.
For me, it's a little bit of security. So I know how much money I'm going to get each month, yeah, from that. And when I haven't got as many clients, I end up doing a better job at Asda. No, but truthfully, when I've got, it took me ages to embrace that quiet period because I'd panic. So what I do, I do have like a little bit of a step-by-step thing that I do.
Yeah,
so if I all of a sudden start to feel a little bit like, oh, that person's ending next week, or that person's just come to end, or a couple of them have come to end at once, the first thing I do is I change something on my profile. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this works, but I have done it on many of occasions. And even if you change something from a full stop to an exclamation mark, yeah, right, I change something.
Yeah.
And then in the hope that it kind of brings me back up to the top.
Yeah.
I also am a lover of the top spots.
Yeah.
And you will see me at some points in time at 12 o'clock waiting to press the button. Yeah. To try and get it, you know, but I, and that has really helped me in moments of where I've worried that I've done that and it just seems to sort of just sort it out,
yeah,
and it feels productive, it feels like I'm actively doing something.
Yeah.
Once I've done those things, they're kind of the only things I do. Mm-hmm. Once I've done those things, I settle into, right, okay, so now I've got a bit more spare time. It won't be a mega amount of spare time, but where I've got more spare time, I'm going to see my friends, I'm going to go for lunch, I'm going to go for a glass of wine, you know, I'm going to do whatever it is that I enjoy doing more, reading, you know, I like reading a lot of psychological thrillers, I'm obsessed by them actually, and so that's what I do, so that's how I kind of feel like I keep it. Don't get me wrong, there's been times where people have tried to encourage me into doing online, because I've started to do that more recently. I completely was against working online.
Yeah.
I just didn't like it,
yeah,
but then now I have found I've pushed myself outside my comfort zone. This is more of a recent thing, really, that I've got online a little bit more. And, yeah, so that kind of opens things up. So I changed on my profile that I could do online, and that kind of brings it in. And then I've just more recently added some pictures to my profile. So I will just here and there just do little tweaks.
Yeah.
And it feels enough to kind of settle for a minute.
Yeah.
And I just have this belief, I have to have this belief, that it will work out.
Yeah.
You know? So I just sit back and think they'll come, and they do.
Yeah, fantastic. Because I think that's the thing that, you know, people might be really encouraged by, is that, like you said, you don't have a website and you don't do social media either, do you? You don't, you know.
I did have a page where I started doing that, but to me it was useless.
Yeah.
I will say that the only time I went back on it again is when I did the coaching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I and because I thought, oh, maybe I want people to know that I do that, because one of the things that I really struggle with, and I still do struggle with it to this day, actually, is when someone asks me, what type of counselling do you do?
Yeah.
I still have not fine-tuned that, you know, because I don't pigeonhole myself, actually. That's one thing I don't do.
Yeah.
Now, I know that, you know, again, some people might choose to have a niche.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, over a period of time, I have thought about, I absolutely love men in therapy.
Mm.
So that was something that I thought, oh, maybe I'll just do men.
Mm.
Or, you know, I do get these moments. And those moments come around more for me, or those thoughts come around more for me when I have had a few finish.
Yeah, and then when you sort of thinking,
all of a sudden going, oh, so my mind naturally, I do notice that when I have a lack of clients, my mind does naturally start going into, right, what can I do?
Yeah.
And I've noticed that I do that each and every time.
Yeah.
So my mind naturally, I suppose that comes from my own personality of doing what I can to
try and bring people in. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, but so it sounds like, you know, you've got this routine that you do, and that tends to work for you, and it does bring people in for you. So it works, doesn't it? That's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. It does work. You know, and as I say, I also am very aware of not taking on too many as well. Mm. I do have a really nice little sweet spot, and I have actually, I do now do some supervision.
Yeah.
That I did that supervision training a very long time ago. I think I did it 2 years after I trained, actually.
Yeah.
And then thought, no, I prefer the client work.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm really enjoying my supervision.
Oh, really?
Now,
yeah. You sort of feel like just in a different
place.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I still want, I still prefer the client work. Mm. But I think that it's something that I wouldn't be as adverse to now.
Yeah, you know. It's really interesting to hear how you've continued, you know, with your private practice. Do you get people coming back as well? Is that part of the turnover? You know, you'll get people sort of come back after a couple of years, or?
I do. And that's, again, something that I really do let clients know, you know, and I think that, you know, I always sit there and say, like, there might be people that come to an end, because the thing is, ultimately, we're trying to, you know, I hope people won't argue with this, but we're trying to get them to a place where they can manage themselves,
yeah,
with tools, and, you know, and to be, you know,
still
in more control of their own life,
yeah,
right? But then I also do understand the real benefit of counselling when someone doesn't have any other support. Because it took me a while, actually, this was another thing that I remember struggling with over time, is that if clients stayed long, I thought I wasn't doing the correct job. But my supervisor at the time, same person, said to me, "What? How's that my decision on how long a client should be for?" I mean, don't get me wrong, I weren't telling him, "You've now got to go," but I just got this sense of, I felt like I wasn't doing the correct job if they were staying for a long time.
Yeah.
I've now got clients that have been with me for a really long time. Mm. So I soon got out of that. But I will say that I now understand the value even more so if they haven't really got someone. And it's why not pay for counselling once a week, once a fortnight, once a month even, after a period of time, when, you know, you might pay to go and get your nails done, or you might pay for something that's more different type of self-care. You know, you might go to a sound bath every month. You might, you know, so I've now started to see it. It took a long time, but I now started to see it as, sometimes people use it as a way of just like a maintenance,
yeah,
type, keep coming. And so, and I will always say to my clients when they leave, you know, I'm not gone, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still here. So, and that's worked really well. I had some clients that come back for the odd one. You know, I might not have seen them for years, and they just pop up out of blue.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you still doing it? I'm like, yeah. And then they will come and have one. You know, I've had people come back where they've dealt with the thing that they came for originally, but something else has come up, and they just need an outside perspective, you know, someone that's going to listen and help.
Yeah, work through the next thing.
Yeah.
And if they've, you know, they've built up a relationship with you, why would they go anywhere else, really? So if you could give a piece of advice to therapists just starting out, you know, people just starting out in private practice, what would you say?
I honestly, to God, just feel like I want to shout out, ask for help.
Yeah.
That's literally what I want to say.
Yeah.
Because, and that came quite instinctively in me to say that, because I think that how people work, how they build up in their head, can seem really daunting. Mm. And I've got a very good friend who trained a couple of years after me, and we both did our placement at Mind, and she is still at Mind, and she is still never jumped out of it and gone into private practice, and it's been donkey's years, right? And I just said to her, I was like, I'll help you, like, I'll do it, you know. So it's a lot of people's own stuff, you know, that gets in the way of one, asking for help, and two, maybe they felt the same way I did, like, you know, that maybe I can't do the real thing, you know, while I'm working for free. It kind of, it, you know, it's almost like, you know, what can people expect if I'm working for free?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not wording that right, but do you know what I mean?
Is like, it sort of like having, if you start charging for something, that means that sort of somehow you've got to reach a certain standard?
Yes. So for me, I think there's always people out there that can help you, other counsellors. Like, I've helped counsellors go through various things that I don't even know from Adam, and I've messaged them and said, look, I've gone through this, you know, like, you know, if you need someone to talk to or just a little bit of information, you know, I'll give you that. There are so many people out there that will help. Yeah. And it's about getting past that thing of feeling like, you know, that someone who's a counsellor who, you know, is trained and should know everything, that there's no, that we shouldn't be asking for help.
Yeah.
Because if we are asking for help, then it means we can't do it ourselves. And what might that possibly say about ourselves, yeah, you know? So I am all about ask for help.
Yeah.
People will help you.
Yeah.
100%. And happily help you as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that that's kind of the best advice I could give,
yeah,
really, is that, you know, I know you've initially got a, yeah, just ask for help. Mm. It really is that when I think about it now.
Yeah. I don't know if this is going to differ, but is there one message you'd like listeners to take away from your story today?
Is that I was once a person who never believed that this could be my life.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to say through stubbornness that I ended up doing it, because I still did it in fear. Like I said to you, I remember my very first counselling session, and we went around the group, and I hate it when they do that, but they went around the group and they said, oh, you know, does everyone want to introduce themselves? And what did you hear initially? Oh, hi, I'm XYZ and I have a degree in psychology.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, you know, I remember it so well, and I was frightened out of my life.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting there thinking, oh my God, you know, they've got degrees and they've got this and they've got that, and, you know, how am I going to do it? And there's me going, I'm Gemma and I'm cleaner. And you know what? I will say it with pride. Don't get me wrong. You will never catch me sort of shying away from that, because I am who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, so it's kind of, again, if you look at it like that, it is that feel the fear and do it anyway, but ask for help.
Yeah.
I will just end it on that. But also as well is that I never thought it would be me be able to do it.
Mm.
But now I just feel so confident in it. And as I say, there was a little bit of like, I can't do this. I can't pay out all this money and all this time and not be a counsellor.
Yeah.
It just can't happen.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't rolling in money, you know, I didn't, you know, I was paying for that monthly with my cleaning money.
It was an investment, wasn't it? An investment in the future.
Yeah, I just thought
didn't want to waste it.
There was never a concept of this can't work.
Yeah.
It had to work,
yeah,
in my mind. It had to work.
Yeah, you made yourself make it work. Amazing. Gemma, it's been really wonderful. I'm sure this is going to just speak to so many people who are listening. It's just so great to have you on board. So I hope the listeners, I hope you've enjoyed my conversation with Gemma. It's just been really lovely to speak to you, Gemma. I think, you know, ask for help and do it anyway, I think is absolutely brilliant. So if you'd like to connect with Gemma, you can find her if you just search for Gemma Anderson, counsellor in Southend, and you'll find her counselling directory and Psychology Today profiles there, and I'll pop a link in the show notes. And if you're a therapist listening who's trying to grow your practice, you know, Gemma's sort of talked about asking for help. That's why I've got my therapy growth group, which is where I can really help you and serve you in growing your private practice and making it sustainable in a way that works for you. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on the Good Enough Counsellors podcast. Thanks for listening. Do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.